You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures and even the movies that New World nearly released. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I feel like I should be smoking a cigar.
You should. And Erica.
Machine guns.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, I put a little razzle dazzle on it, but yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely got the razzle.
Oh.
Yeah. I was all dazzle. So that's funny that you came out.
Each got a different part of it. We're talking about a movie that New World did not release. We're talking about 1975's Capone.
I run this outfit. Me, Al Capone.
How do you think it's going to go in there, Al?
Wasted time. Instead of the government trying to put me away for running the business, they ought to be putting all that effort in getting rid of the Reds and Bolsheviks who are trying to take over our wonderful country.
There hasn't been an honest election in this town in years.
Now you know who owns this town.
Mr. Capone, you're breaking a lot of laws around here.
Capone. The man who made the 20s roar. He seized a piece of America all for himself and rose from street fighter to emperor of Chicago.
Even as kids, we had brains. These punks today, they have nothing.
No, not all of them, Frank. Young Capone, if I were you, I'd put him on the payroll.
When are you going to get it through that cement head of yours that we are businessmen and not U.S. Marines?
You spend all your time hitting people?
I take Sundays off.
Which, I should say, was a movie that New World nearly released, according to the LA Times, in 1974. They talked about Big Bad Mama had been the movie at the time that they had just finished. The LA Times says that they had just finished shooting the movie for a budget of $750,000. I can say, I can't remember the exact figure, but I know Corman has definitely mentioned the budget being a lot lower than that. Probably, I think, about $500,000. But he always would say to the press that it was more than it was. But they had just finished shooting that, and it says that Corman's company, New World Pictures, will follow with several major productions this year, among them Cockfighter, which we discussed in our previous episode. Mm-hmm. We talked to Kayla Janice about her book about Cockfighter. And then they say The Racer. I'm not sure which one that could be. Possibly Death Race 2000, I'm not sure. And a biography of Al Capone. So I'm not sure if Corman was ever truly going to make this movie for New World, but he definitely did make this movie for Fox, and the reason being is because he had made a movie before for Fox. As Corman revealed in the movie world of Roger Corman, edited by J. Philip DeFranco, he said that... Capone was the first in a series of pictures, low-budget pictures by studio standards, that I did for 20th Century Fox. They wanted a series of films budgeted at about $1 million, which was high for me but low for them. Again, not too far off from that $750,000 that they said Big Bad Mama was supposedly made for, but... they made me a very nice offer. That was when New World was just starting. I said yes, and we agreed. They said they wanted to start right away, and did I have any ideas? And I said, well, I made the St. Valentine's Day Massacre a number of years ago, which did well, and one possibility to get this started would be to do Capone. They agreed immediately. It was one of the fastest things. I made up the idea during the meeting. They agreed, and we went ahead and produced the picture on that basis. So right away, they did it, and they even got a script from Howard Brown, who was a TV writer and author. And he had written St. Valentine's Day Massacre. He was a guy who was always fascinated by Capone. The difference between that movie and this one was this Capone is more of like a biography, sort of going from his early days, if you will. Mark is shaking his head. So it goes from his early days as a gangster in New York through to his death, really. In very quick vignettes, sort of chopped together with there are some time stamps, but you get a little bit lost through it. But I know, Mark, you've actually seen
a little bit. I mean, this movie introduces, we have often talked about movies that have too many characters. This movie has many characters, and they give no introduction to them, except they happen to be in the room that Capone's in at the time that he's there. Yeah. And you're like, wait, who's this person? How does this person relate to Capone? I have no idea. That's how I spent an hour and 45 minutes going, who's this person? this person?
This movie assumes that you know a lot about Capone going into it.
It does. Yeah.
It does.
So
yeah.
Do your homework.
You're like, who's Capone? And you're watching this, you're like, it ends and you're like, who's Capone?
Right. Also, it's expecting that you don't also know much about Capone, because if you did, you'd know he had a wife and a child.
Right. But, which they do not cover.
Do not cover at all.
Yeah.
I wasn't as worried about that, which is why I think I probably had a more fun time with this. So this one is not like the most fun exploitation film that you could have made about Capone. I will say that. But I think I had a little bit more fun than Mark, who felt a little like you did not give me the story of Capone. Mark, how much do you know about Capone? Is this something I didn't realize?
I'm not at all a historian of Capone, so I'm not trying to say that. I just, the fact that he was married and had a child, and they skipped right over that. And I'm also thinking his girlfriend in the movie really should go to the clinic and get checked, like, as soon as possible.
Well, she died, so I think she skipped that. She skipped getting checked.
Well, she didn't die because she also didn't exist.
She didn't die in real life, but she did die in the movie.
Oh, fair. I'm confusing. Yeah. The lines are blurring between, you know, what his real life and this movie.
Yeah, this definitely does take a lot of liberties with the movie. Like, for instance, Frank Nitti gets the final word on Capone, but had died years before Capone in real life. So, like, there's lots of bits and pieces that you're like, well, but at the same time,
he takes over the whole empire as a dead man.
Right. Yeah. Which, if you want to follow,
was this movie from Frank's perspective?
Oh, maybe it was.
Maybe
this is how Frank remembers it going down.
This is Frank dreaming of Al Capone's history, and it's just his sort of fever dream of it. Yeah. And like he blurs a few things and gives him a mistress.
A Jacob's Ladder scenario. He's just dreaming the whole thing.
Oh man, that's a good movie. Is that A Nearly New World? We should watch that one. How upsetting to listeners that I've seen Jacob's Ladder but not The Godfather. How upsetting is that? Is that just pissing some people off? Oh God, probably.
I will admit, I was watching this movie and I did go, what is going on? I had to kind of like take a pause break and check a little bit of, again, just a little Wikipedia. I know it's not the most accurate source, but I was like, let's just get a little overview here. I'm just, let me just get a little bit. Okay. So he's from New York. Okay. He goes to Chicago. Okay. Some of these characters are real. You don't really know who. I really was confused. Who's this O'Banion character?
Yeah.
I guess he's just the guy with the thick Irish accent. I was like, I had to go back and kind of figure that out. And
I had to go to Wikipedia to try to piece together some of the plot lines, because I'm like, who is that guy? And whose team is he on? When I say he, I mean he's, because there's a lot of people in this movie, and you're like, I don't know, who are the bad guys? Who are the good guys? Who's he teaming? I don't understand who's mad at who. Everyone's mad at each other, and I don't know why.
Yeah, for sure.
Once went to Wikipedia, and I'm okay with that. I was like, this is wild. This could be about anybody with the last name Capone. Not necessarily Al. Could be about Josh Capone. We don't know.
It was about a Capone that also went into crime in Chicago also around the same time. But
also in Frank Nitti's fever dream of Capone, Chicago was very hilly.
Yes. That was a big bone of contention for Siskel and Ebert, who, I mean, as Chicago-based movie reporters, were very upset with the way Chicago looked. Which largely, obviously, when they would shoot outside outside of a back lot. They were shooting in California, but they did shoot this in several back lots. I actually thought watching it that maybe because they were shooting it for Fox that they would have done it at Fox, which has a very extensive back lot, particularly of New York and all that stuff. I was on the Fox lot once, and I was able to kind of walk through a little bit of it, which was very cool. But Steve Carver, the director, says they shot like on every back lot, like Warner Brothers, Universal, like they shot everywhere. And I was like, you know what? It doesn't look that bad. The backlot stuff doesn't look terrible. It's obviously not Chicago, but, you know, lots of movies shoot on backlots. So I'm like, I was a little forgiving of it. Not so much my co-hosts.
Yeah. The car chase scene is not on a backlot. It's like somewhere in Calabasas. And I only say that because it looks like Calabasas. I mean, before the houses and such, but...
Eric and I met in Chicago, so we can definitely visit.
We met
us
in the
there.
Hills of Chicago.
the hills.
Fell in love on one of those many hills.
The mountain ranges.
Yep, just watching the sunset from one of those hills. That's what they always speak of, the hills of Illinois. You know, like that's what they talk about.
They call it Illinois.
Illinois.
Yeah. That's where you get those beautiful bluffs.
Oh, you want hills? You need to go south. You go south, friend.
Again, Steve Carver directs. He had directed Big Bad Mama, big hit for New World. He'd also directed The Arena for New World. And I liked what he did here. He's not the most fancy director. In fact, probably the most fancy thing he did during all this was... they would do these fade to reds, which they did in between the title sequence. But then they would sort of do, it was sort of another thing of sort of a passage of time. If they had really kept it up a lot, it really would have helped know that we were progressing in time.
Thank you for calling that fancy. I felt like that was the equivalent of like someone hosting I'm going to age myself, PowerPoint. And doing that, like, fade out to the next slide.
Yeah, right, right. The only thing it missed is, like, everything dissolve turning into flipping to the squares.
Yeah.
I would have loved a good flip, square flip, you know? I would have loved that.
I'm just saying, every time when I watched this and it went to that red, you know, screen, I'd go, death in my mind.
Yeah. But use it in particular when there is some death in here. And it's interesting that, Mark, you had in one of our previous Corman birthday celebration episodes, you had watched the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yep.
And they actually used some footage from that in this. Did you notice it?
Is that the scene where they shoot up the restaurant and it looks like all grainy, like it was taken from another movie?
I believe it was. I don't know because I haven't seen St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and you have, so that's why I'm asking.
Well, I don't. I didn't memorize frame for frame.
Ooh, that was so aggressive. Red screen. Every time Ryan says something passive aggressive, we're gonna go to an audio red screen. I'm gonna go.
It's not trying to be passive aggressive. I'm trying to be aggressive. Mark saw it. Tell me what it is. So you didn't memorize every
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so you didn't notice it.
No, except
hell,
I just
Mark,
figured,
you don't memorize every movie?
I figured Lame. The scene Dumb. Where the quality of the film got dramatically different. I was like, oh, that must be from St. Valentine's Day Massacre that they took this from.
Yeah, the graininess, I thought it was probably from that. But our lead character, Ben Gazzara, speaking of knowing we're going through time when he shows up, he's got sort of darker hair than he usually has. And I was like, oh, look, he's got more hair than he does in St. Jack. It's very dark. And I'm like, okay, we're going to just see him progress and age as we go through. Not really.
No, not really.
They were not like, you know what? Capone was born looking 45, and he remained so until he died in his late 40s. So.
Yeah. But look. So, that's not Ben's fault. That's on makeup. Ben is acting his ass off. All right? Pulling us in, charming us all, making us fall in love with him, even though he's Josh Capone. You know? Still fell for
Capone.
It.
Good old Joshy Capone. Joshy Capone.
Cousin of Al Capone.
So did you like Ben Gazzara in this movie, Erica?
Yes. I got a thing for Ben Gazzara. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. I think he's great. I thought he was great in St. Jack, obviously. And I thought he was great in this. Like, this movie's ridiculous and over the top. And I still was like, aw. Like, when it didn't work out for him, I'm like, oh, I thought this maybe was the Capone version where it works out and he's fine.
Right. Yeah. And he gets to retire. He lives to be an old man.
He lives to be 90 and he has grandchildren and he's like sitting on his front porch, you know, I don't know. Yeah.
He just dies chasing his grandson through a tomato orchard.
A tomato orchard? Wow. Yeah. I'd love to visit that.
Well, if you saw The Godfather, you would know.
Yeah, you saw The Godfather, you'd know what I'm talking about. You just don't know that reference. Guys. That's okay. Speaking of movies that you may have seen, is this your first movie you've seen with Capone in it, Erica?
Who, me?
No, I'm talking about Joshua. I'm talking...
Oh. Well, was Capone in that one gangster movie with... Kevin Costner?
The Untouchables,
yes. Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen that. Yeah. So no, this is my second. This is my second Capone movie.
Well, I can't make fun of that because that's my big touchstone with Capone as well, even though he's been featured in many movies. And I'm sure I've seen him in, like, the character portrayed in other films, but Mark and I watched The Untouchables so many times as youngsters that not only is it somewhat kind of hard to see Ben Gazzara as Capone because I just think of Robert De Niro, but also like it was hard to see Sylvester Stallone as Frank Nitti because, you know, it's like it also gives you a very strong impression of who Frank Nitti is, even though this one clearly has a bigger role for Frank Nitti, gives a lot more information about him. It's got a lot more going on, but I'm kind of stuck in the Untouchables land, which a lot of reviewers were too, which is why I think they were a little harsh with this movie at the time, because Capone had been in so many movies before and it was such a touchstone for many people. So not the Untouchables, obviously, which had not yet been made, but had you seen Capone in other movies, Mark?
Well, I saw St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which we've already talked about.
Well, you have talked about.
Seen the Untouchables. Well, I wasn't talking to myself when I talked about St. Valentine's Day Massacre. I wasn't just it wasn't just solo me talking to me.
Red screen.
We did talk about it, but what St. Valentine's Day Massacre and Untouchables did that this one doesn't do is it sticks to like the things that we know about Capone. This movie wants to tell you a non-factual, longer version of Capone's story. It's like the equivalent of, you know, when you set up your LinkedIn page and you're putting in
a long time now, but
your employment history. And you think, you know, there are some jobs I had early on in my career. I'm just going to go ahead and leave off my LinkedIn page because it's probably not that relevant. This movie is like, no. We're going to cover everything. We're going to cover your entire work history. Another better example. Imagine if Friday the 13th spent 45 minutes covering Jason Voorhees growing up before he drowned in the lake. Lot of time covering the part of the story that you really don't give two fucks about.
So the upcoming movie, series, the Camp Crystal Lake or whatever.
I have no idea.
I think it's actually more about his mom, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But okay, either way, you cover the mom from the teenage years on up before we get to the part where she starts killing everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
she's taking young Jason to the zoo and stuff, and you're like, all right,
potty training Jason, you know, like all the things that you're like, I don't know how
he keeps shitting himself. I don't know what to do. Forget it. Just keep diapers on him all the time.
I'm just gonna give him a machete and let him figure it out.
He loves peas. I don't know why. He just loves peas.
Keep shitting his pants. Here's a fucking machete, Jason. Figure it out.
She keeps giving him that for anything.
He's like, I just need toilet paper. She's like, use your machete.
He can't stop playing tiddlywinks. Here, Jason, here's your machete. You have someone to play with.
He's like, don't come crying to me. Just go kill someone if you're upset. Right? Don't come crying to me.
Get your second machete. You don't need Legos. Just stack the machetes against each other.
Let me get you some more machetes. I'm going to go down to the machete store. Crystal Lake has a lot of machete stores.
Mm-hmm.
It's the birthplace of machetes. Nobody knows this.
No, the irony is they didn't grow up in Crystal Lake, so it takes 15 episodes before they even introduce Crystal Lake. Right. That's like watching this movie.
Crystal Lake's like 45 minutes away, so they almost never go.
They never go.
It's a drive. The traffic at this hour? I'm not going to Crystal Lake. It's a terrible time to drive over there. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You're going to have to just deal with the machetes you got, Jason. I'm not going to the machete store. Just deal with the 5 machetes you own.
He's got them in like a book, like he's collecting comic books or baseball cards or just in plastic in a book.
Right. He's keeping them really fresh.
This is my Tony Gwynn machete.
No, you could not take it out and hold it. That's my machete.
Don't, for love of God, don't bend it. That's going to ruin its potential resale value.
Hey, don't touch that one. That was the machete I got with my mom when we went to Milwaukee.
That's it. I'm going to chop your head off.
And then he goes back, and then his mom calls him, and he stops. And you're like, oh, he's about to kill... No, he didn't kill anybody.
No, he didn't kill anybody.
I guess we got a few more episodes to go before we get to a death, I guess. But yeah, Ben Gazzara, we all love St. Jack on this podcast, and I love him in that. I feel like this one was a little bit, I didn't mind him in this. I didn't think like he got super deep into the role, and there may have been a reason for it. The reason being that Steve Carver has said that Gazzara was very difficult to work with and was
that
drinking.
That makes me like him more.
And he was drinking very heavily, including on set when he was supposed to be working. So,
getting into character, Ben. Okay. All right. Go on.
So he was a little bit difficult on set. In fact, there's a big section, Roger Corman's New World Pictures Volume 3, where Steve Carver goes into how difficult it was to work with Ben Gazzara in this movie. In particular, there's a scene where he and Sylvester Stallone are supposed to come out of a car and shoot down a bunch of Irish guys. And they had this whole thing where once Ben Gazzara starts firing his gun, it sets off a whole lot of explosions and other things. So I'm going to just read a little brief part of Steve Carver talking about it. He said, because he was showed up to set drinking, and of course Roger told Steve Carver just to work with it. Because Corman's like, we only have so much time for this one. Though they did shoot this over 6 weeks.
Yeah, Roger's like, we didn't hire him to dry him out. We hired him to play Al Capone. So figure it out.
Yeah. But he says, so when Ben came on set that day, I kept telling my assistant to get him coffee. I told Ben myself, Ben, you know there are no lines. All you have to do is get out of the car and pull the trigger of the machine gun. I clarified for him that first I was going to call action, which would put the cars, the stuntmen, and Ben's car in motion. Then I was going to call second action for the car doors to open and Ben to come out. Then I was going to call end.
Action.
Right. Sorry. Third action. He would call end, which would mean for him to pull the trigger of the machine gun. There were 3 distinct cues. Sure enough, I call action, and then second action. Ben gets out of the car, pulls the machine gun. Wrong cue. Everybody's out of place. Cars are flying everywhere, stuntmen jumping everywhere, Ben shooting, bullet hits are going off, everything's out of place, with people running for their lives. Oh God, Ben shooting has set off everything. I'm yelling, cut, cut, cut. My assistants are running all over the place trying to stop everything. It had taken 3 days to set this shot up, and I have like 4 or 5 cameras rolling, unbelievable. Ben turns to me and says, you said end. I did not. He starts arguing with me. I say, forget it. I tell my assistant to send him home. That's what it was like working with Ben Gazzara on this.
I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I feel like Ben Gazzara and I would have got along really well.
Well, Ben Gazzara gave him a lot of grief to Steve Carver at the time, because Steve was also still very young. He came to New World and was like editing
trailers. Yeah, what did fucking Steve know at this time? I'm pissed on Ben's behalf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, sometimes those happy accidents make for a better shot. Maybe it was actually better. Maybe that's the take that they went with, because they were like, actually, that worked.
He goes on to say that they reset up what they could, and then they just shot without Ben Gazzara because he was sent home. And they said, well, we got the shot of him coming out of the car. We have his shot. We're just going to shoot everything else.
Guys, am I the Ben Gazzara of this podcast?
For sure. For sure.
Why did you answer so fast? That's it.
Uh-oh. Get an assistant. Get an assistant. Take her out of here.
Wait, did you say action or...
or end.
Well, Ben Gazzara was not sold as Steve Garber because he was so young, and he gave him grief, like, instantly. The only reason Ben Gazzara did the movie, in fact, was because John Cassavetes agreed to do it. So Steve Carver got John Cassavetes to do a small role because Cassavetes said, I can only do like 2 days. Because he was editing the movie Husbands, one of his earlier movies. Ben Gazzara was in that. And that was like the beginning of their working relationship together. Ben Gazzara had really was more known at that point for TV. He'd been in a couple TV shows. So he'd not been in a whole lot of movies at that point, but was starting to work with Cassavetes. And he was a New York actor, and he was like, who's this young punk kid? I mean, again, Ben Gazzara, I think, is in his mid-40s making this movie. Steve Carver is at least 20 years younger than him, just thinking, who is this kid telling me what to do? So because Cassavetes did it, he was like, all right, I'll do it. And he guessed he liked the script as well. So he also said this, Steve Carver, in a separate interview. He mentioned that the next day, though, after this incident, they were shooting the final scene of the movie with Capone at the swimming pool, which they shot apparently at Barbara Streisand's house.
Oh, no kidding. Oh.
What?
It's a nice house.
Yeah. And he said, we stopped for lunch. Ben grabbed me and hugged me and started crying. He said, told me he was sorry. I said, Ben, you don't have to apologize. I understand what you're going through. He nearly kissed me. That was something. He was going through stuff. His wife was not doing well at the time. His daughter was like doing drugs at the time. His wife had like a medical condition. There was a lot going on. So he was kind of drinking through it. So
everybody's going through something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So other people in this, though, is we have to mention Stallone. This is the movie he does right before Death Race 2000. So he continues to work with Corman after this. Had not done Rocky yet. This is year-ish from Rocky. What's Rocky? 76? So he's still like writing the script and still trying to just work as an actor. This is the period that Stallone doesn't talk about much.
Right. Like how I don't have the time that I worked at Baskin-Robbins on my LinkedIn page.
You should.
A critical part of your life, Mark.
You should, though. Only because everybody would be like, no. No, I always, dog. You didn't work there.
I still have my time working at the Highlander men's clothing store. I mean, I still have that on there.
Wow. Took a real Capone approach to that LinkedIn page, huh?
It's on my resume as well. I mean, it's there. I want people to know my humble beginnings.
So, yeah, it's a lot of information.
It's a holiday gift wrap. That was long my resume. First job.
Wow.
Ryan puts it all out there. What can I say?
It's all out there. Yeah, it's all out there.
He's an open book.
Each production I did, it's like I'm... Oh, page 10, huh? When are we going to get to his most recent? And I start in reverse order. I go from the beginning to the end.
He starts from birth. First job, youngest child.
Yeah. A young dreamer.
Yeah.
Do you have the time that we acted in that murder mystery trolley?
Oh, my God. Ride? Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'll never forget that because it was one of those early moments I thought about as I would later on go on to study improv and do improv, you know, for various theater companies. Because I was supposed to just be the guy yelling extra, extra, this kid in a little English accent, yelling extra, extra, and like about the story that they needed to know for the murder mystery. Mm-hmm. And I was like basically saying like, buy the newspaper, you know, buy this newspaper. And one guy from was like, hey, I'll buy a newspaper. And I was like, I didn't know what to do. And I was like, I had your bag from your job as a newspaper boy. which I assume is also on your LinkedIn.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Paper route is right there in the mix.
Yeah.
So everyone knows that
you did finance. You had to go and collect for the newspaper. You also delivered the newspaper.
Right. Yeah. It was my entrepreneurial spirit demonstrated. That's right. As a paper boy.
and the guy was like, "Yeah, I'll buy a paper." And I was like, "Well, I only have the one." Which I didn't. I only had one paper. I was like, I can't sell them the paper. Then I got nothing else.
Yeah.
And everybody laughed. And I was like, ooh, I didn't mean for that to be funny. But it was the truth.
They laughed and you were like,
I was like, truth in comedy. It's funny because it was true.
Old Ryan died and new Ryan was born.
I was but a child at that moment. And then I grew to be preteen, let's say. I was probably about 11, 12 years old, maybe.
One of the worst things about having a paper out was going around and collecting from all the houses. Because back then, they wouldn't mail in the checks. So you had to go knock on doors. But then, like, the good part of it was they would then have to go find... I got to go find my checkbook. And they leave the door open. And most houses had the TV on so I could catch a little bit of Alf while they were looking for that checkbook. And I'd be like, take your time.
Critical.
I gotta watch. I'm not catching Elf tonight unless I stand.
Is this the episode where he catches the cat? Ooh, I hope so. Yeah, and if you weren't recording Elf on video on VHS, you were not watching Elf.
This was my only chance. Exactly.
This was it. But here's what Stallone said. He did speak briefly about working on this movie, and he says this: I particularly enjoyed working on Capone. Because it was like the cheesy, mentally challenged, inbred cousin of The Godfather.
Wow. Wow, that is an indictment. There's nothing I can say that's going to top that. Yikes.
Yikes.
I don't know.
Yikes.
Some of us haven't seen it, so wouldn't know. Also, I just feel like that's not fair to say. When did he say that? Did he say it, like, recently?
Right after wrapping up Cliffhanger. He said that.
Yeah, because it's like...
No, that would still be the 90s. This was like, I think, 2000, like in the mid to late aughts. So like...
I mean, I've probably said a lot of regrettable things in my time, but I feel like when you look back on something like that, that's not a fair assessment.
Yeah.
Like to just dismiss something in that way. Like, he's not bad in it. Like, maybe you felt like it was cheesy or it wasn't whatever you thought it would be, but I feel like he still does a decent job in it. So to just trash it feels like, what are you not happy
as somebody about? Who did pay money to see Expendables 4, I can say it's definitely not the worst thing he did in his career.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if, is that just like
also
comment?
Having watched Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, the script you got tricked into doing by Arnold Schwarzenegger because they were going so back and forth about movies and stuff and fighting over scripts at the time. And Schwarzenegger put out that he was potentially interested in it when he was absolutely not. And Stallone bit and did the movie instead. Anyway, that's the
I'm
story.
I'm going to say something that's probably going to piss a lot of people off, but Rocky's fucking cheesy.
Ooh.
Which Rocky are you talking about? The original?
Which one?
Not the
all
original.
All of them. They're all like super goofy.
Not the first one.
Not the first one.
They're all goofy.
I disagree.
They're all goofy.
They get, certainly two has some goofiness. Three is particularly goofy.
Four is real goofy.
Four is like, you know.
Amazing.
When you take your citizenship test for this country, they should just sit you down and watch this. And then you will be American. This is it. This is what you need to know. You need to know Rocky IV.
Welcome to America.
That's it.
Yeah.
The other person that also that is also in this movie that was in Death Race 2000, Martin Cove, who I absolutely love and has his own little career of working with Corman. He also does this movie, goes right into Death Race 2000 as well. And then I have some quotes from him about the movie from New World Pictures Oral History Volume 2. And he has a pretty hilarious story because it's very Corman-y. Because he does these two movies and he doesn't work with Corman for a while. He eventually does like a Sergio Santiago movie. And then does Babyface Nelson, the 1996 version. It's a remake, actually. With C. Thomas Howell of Soul Man, right?
Of Soul Man fame, yep.
he played Babyface Nelson, and Martin Cove played John Dillinger. And he says, I'm in an open convertible, and guys from a rival gang are chasing me. I've got a mustache, blue suit, and I'm standing up and shooting shells out of the back of the convertible with the top down. I never saw who was chasing me. A year later, Babyface Nelson gets released. I watch the movie, and all of a sudden, the guy chasing me appears in a tan suit. I have a picture of me in a tan suit. I recognize the car and the whole deal. I said to myself, this looks really familiar. I zoom in on my VHS remote, which I don't know how he did that. And there it is.
On the remote itself?
We never had a VCR where you could, like, go into the picture and getting closer. I didn't know that was possible.
I zoom in on my VHS remote. Doesn't that mean just moving the remote closer to your eyes?
right. He just put the remote in front of his face. So, and then he was like, I can't see. Now I can't see the movie. I can only see the remote. He said, zoomed in with his remote, and there it is. Marty Cove chasing Marty Cove. Corman had taken footage from Capone, where I was hanging out of an old Model T, shooting at someone. It was me, and only I would have known this because I zoomed in with the remote to see myself. Martin Cove hanging out of that car, shooting at Martin Cove 20 years later, playing John Dillinger.
That's pretty good.
I was like, "That's as Roger Corman as it can as you can get." Like that's the experience.
I wonder if Corman had a laugh with that. He was like, "Let's see if he'll ever notice this. He probably won't."
That's kind of what he thought too. He said, "I wonder if Roger did that to pay homage to me." Literally as a joke, a very inside joke that only I would catch. Or did he do it because he had the stock footage and he owned it and he used it?
I mean, both
could be true. Yes. Both could be true. Yeah. It's Corman, you know? It could both be true. But I just love that. I was like, you know, even into the 90s, he was still like, let's use footage from the 70s. Who cares?
Why not?
I own the footage. I mean, God knows he put that burning house from the House of Usher. Remember the House of Usher, Mark?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember. I mean, the version I saw was slightly different than yours, but I do remember it.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, it might be in Mask of Red Death as well. I can't recall.
Probably is. That's what got me confused.
He burned a house down, and he used that burning house footage in tons of stuff, because he's like, they really did burn this house down. So he's like, I got footage of a house burning. I could put it in anything, as long as we needed a house burning.
Isn't that like the helicopter explosion that he used repeatedly also?
Right, exactly. Well, that was something that they had from a movie, and certainly Joe Dante and Alan Arkush, whenever somebody would point a gun somewhere, they were like, in trailers, they could just cut to an exploding helicopter. So they're like, I mean, how would you know that it's in the movie or if it isn't? But they did reuse that one. I think it was in CoverGirl Models, they reused that exploding helicopter. Or maybe they used the exploding helicopter in CoverGirl Models. Who can be sure? The other person I want to mention, Susan Blakely, who does play Capone's imaginary girlfriend in this. Mm-hmm. Which is either, this is either Frank Nitti's story or this is Al Capone's story. This is his Jacob's Ladder at the pool at the end of the movie, where he's going back through his life, just riddled with syphilis. And he's like remembering it. And he's like, I remember I had a pretty girlfriend and not have a wife and a daughter. I had a very pretty girlfriend. And she was super into me.
I think it's actually wife and son, but I get your point.
No, I think he had a daughter. He had a daughter, which I wonder why there was, you know, a moment where he talks about, if I had a daughter, it wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have her like talking like you were at one point. Like he was, you know, pissed off about it. But I mean, do some real time research. Let's find out.
Unless his daughter was named Albert Francis Capone, he had a son who changed his name to Albert Francis Brown because he wanted to separate himself as much as he could from his father.
For his YouTube career, when he's like, hey, welcome to my YouTube channel. I'm Albert Francis Brown. And today I'm going to try some crazy hot mustard. Like and subscribe. Super spicy mustard. Yeah, I'm from the hills of Chicago. You know me. I'm from the upper hills.
Every year we do this competition where we take mustard and we roll it down one of the Chicago hills.
And we eat it, grass and all.
In the end, the bottle will break apart and we will just take what we can of it. Don't get any glass in your mouth. Do your best not to get glass in your mouth. It has happened.
It sounds more
it's
like
a bit messy with the jars.
Than a mustard challenge.
People have said that, but truly, it's about the mustard. Let's not forget. It's a celebration of mustard in the Chicago Hills.
Also, stop asking me about my dad. I'm not answering any questions. This is a mustard YouTube channel.
Susan Blakely, who plays his imaginary girlfriend, I thought was very good. Also, she was cast with Sylvester Stallone because Sylvester Stallone's biggest role leading up to this was in The Lords of Flatbush, which Erica loves the title of. And Susan Blakely was also in. And Steve Carver saw them in that and was like, let me get both of them. They had the same manager. And I think she's great in the movie. I think she's really good. She steered clear of Corman and New World after this. We won't discuss her again. And I don't know if that's on purpose. But in any case, I thought she was very good in this. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I thought she was great.
Yeah, she's beautiful looking. She goes for it. There's a titty count.
There's a bush count.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Lords of Flatbush.
Capone was the Lord of Flatbush in one scene of this movie.
Yeah, he sure
more
was.
Like the Lords of Fullbush in this movie, am I right?
Red screen.
Was it me or was it hard to understand a lot of the dialogue in this movie?
Oh, totally. Totally. I had to like, put the...
I was like, can you move the mic a little closer? Can you move the mic a little closer to their mouth? Because I can't understand half the shit that they're saying in this movie.
Even with the closed caption, I found myself being like, that's not what they said. No.
I'm not sure. I disagree.
I don't think so. That's not how people speak in the hills of Chicago. I've been there.
That's not hill speak. That's not Chicago hill speak.
No. That's not how they speak in Illinois.
Yeah, I think this is one that, like, the picture looks pretty good. Where I think we watched it on Prime. You can rent it in lots of different places. But the picture looks good, but I think it needs, like, the audio needs to be sort of redone. It's a little... It's still from the 70s, it feels like. It's still not quite made the transition. But let's get towards the end. Syphilis.
Hold on. Before you go there, I do want to talk syphilis. But
thank God. Oh good. Whew.
You skipped one important actor in this movie.
Oh yes, I probably did.
Bennings from The Thing.
Yes.
Is in this movie?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have never seen him in anything else. Now, I haven't watched a ton of movies. I haven't followed his career. But I was thrilled to see him kind of playing the same kind of role in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, he's the voice of reason. He's trying, you know, he's trying to get Capone's ear and be like, hey, this could be bad. We probably shouldn't do this. And I was like, oh, Bennings, always trying to solve the problems.
No, but unlike in The Thing, he's not the first to die. So
no, right. That's true.
That's the only difference.
He is the first to get infected by Capone's charisma, right?
That's right. There's another actor that's also really great in this too, which I point out to Erica, because we also have, and it's late in the movie because I was waiting for him to show up because I saw his name in the credits, but Royal Dano. Mm-hmm. From House 2, guy who plays Gramps in House 2, also shows up as the incoming mayor of Chicago. Anton Cermak, who was the mayor of Chicago from 1931 until he was fatally wounded in 1933. So 2 sweet years as mayor. But anyway, Royal Dano was in there, and it was great. It was great to see him. So, I mean,
and
there's lots of...
Dick Miller.
Yes, Dick Miller playing.
Of course,
Dick Miller makes an appearance.
Doing.
And while this is
Miller
all
thing.
Very important, I also want to just share that this movie introduces that Capone has neurosyphilis.
Yes. Thank you.
And
yes.
I'm nervous that I now have neurosyphilis because I don't know about you guys, but as soon as I heard that, I was like, yikes, what's that? That sounds terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Symptoms are severe headaches, neck stiffness, changes in personality or mood, memory loss, confusion, and muscle weakness. Guys, I have all of those things. I'm nervous that I have neurosyphilis. Uh-huh. I'm nervous about it now.
The difference being, though, is that with Capone, he got it at a point in time when penicillin was just coming onto the scene, if you will.
Oh, shit. So I'm cured? Yeah. I just need some penicillin? Oh, shit, guys. I'm going to be fine.
He had had it for so long that when they introduced penicillin, he took penicillin. But at that point, it was too far along. So it was able to like hold off his symptoms a little while, but it wasn't able to cure him. But penicillin could cure that. Now, they didn't have penicillin throughout the time that he had it. But yes, it is a scary one when you're like, wait, syphilis killed the guy? Now, the movie cost $1 million, as I mentioned before. Did it make money? Oh, yes, it did. It didn't always get the best reviews, but it did make money because it was only $1 million budget. So apparently it made $2 million, the box office. So in 1975, that was considered a pretty good win. And they continued to make more movies for 20th Century Fox. In fact, I think the next one that Corman then produces for them is Fighting Mad, which Jonathan Demme directed, and we talked about a little bit in Crazy Mama, in our episode on Crazy Mama, mm-hmm. in March Madness 2. So, but here is how he does make money. He had to get a little shrewd about it, Corman admits, in his memoir, How I Made 100 Movies in Hollywood and Never Lost a Dime. He said, I saw a report indicating that the total advertising costs were to be deducted twice from the gross. That's a lot of money. I called them on it. That's the way we interpret the contract, they told me. Look at page such and such. I blew up. Sure, on a 50 or 60 page contract, there may well have been an obscure clause buried on the bottom of page 53 between two commas. But I wasn't in the mood to discuss it. I have absolutely no intention of looking at that page or honoring the statement that you find any justification for a double deduction of $1.2 million. That's a deduction of $2.4 million against my share. I don't want to see the contract or talk about it. I want to put everybody in jail for fraud. That double deduction, which happened not to be in the contract, was subsequently withdrawn.
Huh. Good for him.
Yeah. You don't cheat Roger out of money.
Good for him for not only fighting that, but choosing not to reread the contract. He was just like, screw it. My bravado alone will get them to drop this clause.
Well, he does say that it wasn't actually in the contract, but I understand, he was like, I'm not going to bother to go back.
What he said is, this is bullshit. And they had to go back to the contract and went like, oh, actually, it's not in there. Anyway, yeah.
Poor Francis Dole probably had to go find the contract and ask somebody to take a look at it. And is this clause in here? Or Barbara Boyle, who worked at New World and was his lawyer for a long time. So she probably had to look through the contract. But yeah, that's, you know, and the thing is, at this point in time, it's what, 1974, 75? New World's pretty new and doing very well. Mm-hmm. So this contract that he would have with Fox, I have to think, they did a bunch of these movies. I think they did Moving Violation. If I'm right, that's 20th Century Fox.
Is that the one with Richard Pryor?
No, that's the one we talked about.
Sorry.
That's...
close.
Very close. Very similar.
50-50 chance. Very similar.
Is this a pop quiz? I didn't study at all for this. Is this going to be about everything we might have watched previously?
No. I'm just talking about other movies.
I remember Love Letters and Creepshow and St. Jack, only because we just talked about it. And something with Judith Light that we watched recently. And also...
we just talked about it. Dangerous Affection. My God.
Oh, boy.
Stamp of a Killer.
Yikes. There was something with Shoulder Kisses. And I'm still going to make Steamin'. That's all I remember, guys. I don't know.
Your That's memory it. Of this podcast is the equivalent of Al Capone sitting at a poolside fake fishing.
My God. Thank you. That's generous. Thank you. That was generous.
Oh, but I just tried to say that this movie and some of the other movies he made for Fox were always big hits because they weren't made for much money on Fox's terms, mm-hmm. but they brought in a lot of money for New World. So this was probably a critical movie because he would take money that he would get from things like this and put it back into, you know, various parts of New World. I'm sure pocket a little bit of it for himself, and by a lot I mean by a little, and by a little I mean a lot. But yeah, I mean, I think this was a good movie for New World and probably helped Roger's reputation around Hollywood. And he did several more of these, so we have many more of these to talk about. All right, final thoughts on Capone.
My final thoughts are that I'm currently dying of neurosyphilis. And I think that Sylvester Stallone was super harsh on his look back on this. I think Ben Gazzara was hot back then. Now, I know he's passed away, but he was hot. I just think that, like, I'll never be able to be confident enough to go full bush in a movie. Oh, God. What are my other thoughts? What are my other thoughts? Red screen. Oh, I'm done, guys. I'm done.
You died.
I died.
Mark?
Outside of the historical flaws, and I just wish this movie had done a better job of setting up who the different characters are. Even if they had put a title card of kind of like, who this is, he works for this family, something like that would just give you a little more context of who the people in the room are. Because, like we said at the top, or more specifically, I said, this movie has an insane amount of characters.
Take the credit, Mark. Take the credit. You deserve it.
I deserve it. Thank you.
It just gives a year title card as if we all have memorized
the Yeah, it gives us a date. Years. Like, you're like, oh, like right. That's like that date in 1926. Oh, I know that date.
Oh, yeah. I remember that date. Exactly. But then it introduces five more characters and you're going, I don't know who these people are or why should I care about them?
I agree.
Or how are they relevant to the story?
I think I don't know. High school history teacher wrote this movie. There we go. Conspiracy theory. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
But even then,
hell yeah,
it would have some context in the margins of the textbook. And you'd be like, sure. Oh, I get it.
Sure.
Okay. I get what's happening.
You would have some notes from a previous student so you could have some context of what's happening.
Everybody, so you can get those
That's
notes.
Right.
Look for the notes.
Oh, what did they underline? Is that critical for me? I kind of enjoyed this one. I don't think it's as fun as some of the other stuff Steve Carver has done. It's certainly not one of my favorite Steve Carver's movies, but I enjoy what Steve Carver does. He's a very capable journeyman director, certainly not a flashy stylist. We have yet to get to The Arena, which I think might be his best of his New World career. But like his stuff, and this was fun. But not as much fun as Big Bad Mama, for sure.
Yeah.
But a decent one to kind of... It's really like...
Guys, in the grand scheme of things we've watched, this was a fucking blast. All right? It was a motherfucking blast.
Yeah. I mean, fair.
Okay? Fair. You want me to put on Tin Drum again? Let me start it from the beginning?
Well, we don't have to go that far. But if... Okay, but does this rank against Stamp of a Killer? Which
it's below Stamp of a Killer.
Stamp of a Killer is
wild.
Yeah,
but
Stamp way below. I'm putting.
Oh,
on
I thought
Stamp
you meant Stamp of a
before.
Killer was below. I'm like Stamp of a Killer.
No.
That's scratching at my top five. That one.
Yeah. No.
No, Stamp of a Killer was great, but this one is at least like fun. It's ridiculous. The acting in it. Gonna say it, not bad. Mm-hmm. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm a Gazagan, so you know.
Yeah, as are we all. I agree.
Saint
Jack is still in a lot of our top
five.
Oh yeah,
not bad. And with that, go and watch Capone, or go and watch another Roger Corman movie. You can listen to all of our episodes if you want to catch back on all the stuff we've talked about so far. We've mentioned previous episodes we've talked about. We talked about Big Bad Mama. You can go listen to it at our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you can find everything related to NWPP. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.